So Mandy was my family's first African ancestor in America, and she was captured in Ghana and ended up on James Madison Sr.'s plantation. According to our family stories, she was not put on one of the to work on one of the huge tobacco fields. Instead, she was put on a remote cotton field that was used just to make inferior cotton so the slaves could make clothes for themselves. It was called Negro cloth that they made. The story goes, while she was working there, James Madison Sr. became attracted to her because she was such a good worker and he enjoyed watching her move through the cotton fields. He became physically attracted to her, and the result of the attraction was the birth of a daughter, Corrine. So Mandy was my family's first griot. Her daughter, Corrine, was our second griot. Then in the next generation, Corrine drew the attraction of James Madison Jr., who would become the fourth president of the United States. And the result of that attraction was the birth of a son, Jim, who was our family's third griot.
You said that in the eyes of West Africans, griots and griots are fundamentally different than other human beings. What do you mean?
They are recognized as being human beings, but they're iconic and they're transcendent human beings. They're just special. You know, even the way they're buried separately and the burial practices, you know, they're held in such awe that even though they're human, they're considered almost supernatural, and their role is so important and so pervasive in the lives of the people that they touch. You know, whether it's just locally within their own communities, or as they travel to other communities as ambassadors, or sometimes it's just as interpreters. But, you know, they are unique from the time that they start training, which is at a young age. And they just are revered so much.
It is certainly a skill that has been lost consistently, regardless of what culture we're talking about. I mean, the oral histories are gone in many cases. In your book, you talk about your mother calling you and telling you that she is bringing you the box, and you being afraid that this means that she's nearing the end of her life. And then she brings you the box and she says, I wanted you to have time to write the book.
The book has a purpose, and that is to encourage African Americans to embrace their slave ancestry and to recognize that slaves had remarkable qualities and talents that were passed down through the generations to us. And I want that message to inspire all African Americans, but especially the young people. So I think that I accomplished that in this book in a way. And the reason I say in a way is because this book is written for young people, but the audience are adults. So I anticipate adults reading this book and then talking to their children about the messages in the book. But what I would like to do next is to write books that will allow those young people to read for themselves and to, develop their own thoughts and make their own decisions. So I would like to do a young adult book. And then I would also like to do a book for early readers, which would be age appropriate. What can they understand? And I started working on a picture book, for young kids, let's say 5 to 8 years old, and with this message so that they can begin, to look at themselves as really valuable people.
How do you talk about slavery with children?
In the children's picture book, what I want children to learn is that, they came from a long line of people. I want them to have a sense of oral history. And that these ancestors, might even have to use a different word, but these ancestors had many talents and contribute greatly to, their descendants. And to the country, and that their descendants then inherited those qualities, including these children looking at this book now.
Yeah.
So it's not really talking about slavery, although the pictures might show, people who are working in fields or not well dressed, but I wouldn't show them as being enslaved. So I wouldn't cast that negative view on who their ancestors were. I would just show the strengths that those ancestors did in fact have.
Yeah.
And then as you get up to older children, you can begin talking about the concept of people being owned by people, which is a really tough concept.
Yeah. It still is. Yeah.
It still is.
Yeah.
It still is.
People as commodity is a tough thing to analyze. Yeah.
Yes. And being a person who is a commodity is also tough to analyze. But one thing that was so incredible about enslaved people is that though someone considered them commodities, the people, I don't even like saying owned, because owning people, you just can't own a whole person. You can't own their spirit. You can't, own their hopes and dreams. But even in that situation, the enslaved people had a sense of their humanity. That was not taken away from them. They had hard times. They suffered tremendously. But they always knew that they were human beings, as equally human as those people who had papers that said, "I own you." So while these papers said, "I own you," the enslaved people in their minds said, "I am."
Thank you so much for spending some time with me today.
And thank you for this opportunity, Chrissy. I really, really enjoyed our conversation.
Me too.
Very, very much.
It was a pleasure.